Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the August 16th broadcast of Italian Tomatoes. Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the August 16th broadcast of Italian Tomatoes. I'm your host, Bob Curie, and the subject of our show today is beyond Foxy News, keying off the great debate of August 6th and the aftermath of it and the controversies that it generated. The chat is open if you wish to participate in the chat, and if you would like to call into the show, the number is 646-478-0004. That's 646-478-0004. I see Cold Warrior in chat, and he should have special congratulations to him. He is been posting on Breitbart about the Precinct Project, the initiative to bring more conservative Republicans into the precinct committee man slots of the Republican Party, because they really constitute the, if you will, the shareholder base of the party, the people that elect the party officials and the officers and ultimately have a huge impact on determining the candidates. So I want to welcome him and congratulate him again on getting that conduit for his precinct project initiative. I switching to a Sunday show, I want to see how that works out. Evening shows are kind of hard to get live participation in, and although, you know, podcasts can be very good way of doing a show. I mean, I think the live participation does add something to a radio show. I noticed that after the 2012 and 2014 elections, I mean, people are really, really getting turned off by political stuff. They've just had enough because the system and the process is so frustrating. And as for me personally, doing evening shows is a little difficult because I have diabetes. And when I do an evening show and I have a meal beforehand, I get very sleepy after a sugar rush. Then I get a brief second wind, and then another period of fatigue sets in, and I get very sleepy again. So an evening show is kind of hard to do. Many gone are the days when I used to do late night radio with the likes of Caleb Howe and Tommy Christopher. I think my aging body cannot handle that anymore. So I'm going to try Sunday slot, which is a relaxed time and one that I think people do have more free time on a Sunday, and maybe the live participation will amp up a little bit. But to get to the main subject of the debate of the show, which is the debate and the aftermath, the August 6th presidential debate on Fox polled a record audience, over 24 million people, and millions of people were watching Republican politicians interact with the media for the first time, and many were furious on what they saw. Now, everybody knows that the country is in trouble. We have record deficits, a sputtering economy, a record number of people that are not in the labor force, stagnant personal incomes. Abroad, we have aggressive and increasingly well-armed adversaries like Russia and China, who have really been arming themselves to the teeth and asserting themselves internationally all over the globe. We have more and more global terror on the rise at home and abroad, a developing catastrophe in the Middle East, and the rise of the terror state of ISIS and a nuclear Iran, and what I consider to be a very ill-advised agreement, paving the way for Iran to fund its terror operations and to acquire nuclear weapons if they just hang on for a few more years. So with all of this going on, what kind of debate did Fox stage? You had a debate where the moderators took one-third of the airtime, and they spent a good deal of their time asking gotcha questions to the Republican candidates, the leading Republican candidates like Scott Walker and Donald Trump, and kind of ignoring some of the other ones like Ted Cruz. And analysis of the debate has shown that some candidates got relatively little airtime, whereas others got a great deal, but it was in the form of all these gotcha questions. For example, Megyn Kelly asked Scott Walker, who has very distinct pro-life views, a very kind of loaded question: would you really let the mother die because you're opposed to a life exception for abortion? And, you know, in my view, that was a very loaded way of asking that question, very manipulative. And, of course, everybody knows the question that she asked Donald Trump about his comments on women, and she made some quotes from The Celebrity Apprentice and just tried to transform that into his total worldview on women. Again, a very manipulative question, which I don't think he handled particularly well. I mean, he did bat it back adequately in saying that he didn't have time for political correctness, but I thought he could have handled it a little bit better. And then, of course, in retrospect, I mean, Megyn Kelly had some nerve posing a question like that. Because after the debate, when the controversy erupted, clips of her were circulating on the internet of her interview with Howard Stern, where she's dishing with Stern about bra sizes and penis sizes and, you know, a lot of sexually laced innuendo. And it's kind of like, okay, lady, you know, you really don't have the right to get on your pedestal and preach if that's the way you conduct yourself in public, but whatever. Well, in the aftermath of this, I mean, there was a lot of interesting aftermath, Twitter storms all over the place, you know, explosions of discussions on private lists and all of that. But one of the most interesting and one of the most entertaining was the emergence on YouTube of a channel called The Viewer's View, which has two black ladies who are very, very pro-Trump, stumping for Trump, as they say. And I'm going to play a few minutes of one of the clips they did. One clip they did got over 1 million hits. I'm trying to find my clip, and I'm having trouble finding it. So I think what I will do is to the backup clip and play it over the phone. So bear with me. I don't know how long it's going to last, but they're going to be doing very well, I think, this election season, because they've got a great delivery style. They are combining kind of classic African American assertiveness along with a sort of rhythm and blues style delivery with shades of the gospel church, and it's very entertaining to listen to. I mean, sometimes they get so wound up that they kind of run away with themselves. And, of course, analytically, you know, they are claiming that the media is trying to divide the party, which is absolutely true, but then, of course, it is not the media's job to unite a political party, but that's, you know, that's a quibble. They were pretty spot on. And one of the things I think that was really interesting in what they brought out was this crazy logic that some of the people in the Republican establishment, the party apparatus, sites like Red State and Eric Erickson have, where there's, you know, they have this event and this phenomenal influx of viewers comes in. And what are they attracted by? They're there because of Donald Trump's celebrity power. Instead of kind of catapulting off of it, leveraging it to promote the views of the candidates they like, what they did instead was to create this kind of bash Trump dynamic, which is going to turn off all of these newly arrived people. And it's, you know, very self-defeating. And if you are trying to represent yourself as a missionary, if you will, for Republican Party principles and interests, that is really a very bad way of going about managing your media presence. And these ladies, you know, nailed him on that, Eric Erickson, Megyn Kelly, and the whole gang. And I think they did it very effectively. So what we've got is this post-debate controversy, and I think it's good to kind of reveal, to go into a couple of implications of it. But before I do that, I have a caller, and I'm going to recognize her. I believe that is the charming Lady Penguin. Is that you?
Yes, that's me.
That's a long time.
Actually, oh, I know. Well, I usually am totally faded out asleep when it comes time for the show.
Yeah, so I know. I mean, that's what I've been finding as the host, as I've tried to do some shows, even though they're in podcast format. I'm trying to experiment with a time slot that's a little less punishing.
Yeah, because that really pushes the East Coasters.
Well, yeah, it does. And you know, like I you weren't there at the beginning of the show, but, you know, I have diabetes. And when mm-hmm. I do an early evening show, I'm suffering with the sugar rush.
Mm-hmm.
And I get very fatigued. And then I get a little second wind.
Oh, I see. So you're on your second win, and I'm done.
but that's
okay. I did catch most of this, yeah, because I had just come in from church. I had run some errands. But I'm delighted with the topic because it's been very I was trying to sign in and cannot find my old password, so it looks like I've sent for a new one. Let's see.
When I was listening, you know, just personal observation, I did a radio show on the night of the debate, and it was an absolute disaster because I tripped over
mm-hmm.
internet.
I saw that because I had said I wouldn't deal with the debate at all. And then I came home and I said, okay, I'm going to do this. And then, I was so furious. And then I saw on Twitter, the Twitter world, and then I saw your show, yeah, everything technical that could go wrong went wrong.
Everything that went wrong. But it was a very interesting experience anyway, because what happened was I took my portable computer to the local McDonald's, which
mm-hmm,
Fox News on. So I'm sitting in the restaurant, and I was able to stream a little audio. There wasn't very good quality, but it was something.
Yeah.
And I'm here in this restaurant, and the restaurant there weren't many people in it, but they were all glued to the TV.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The these are not, you know, just looking at them, these are not very political people. They're just mm-hmm. people out with their families, you know, having dinner, and they were watching every word.
Uh-huh.
And that is so frustrating to me because of the way the, because I know that experience was replicated all over the country. And what did these all these newly interested people in the political process see? They saw a media circus
mm-hmm.
designed to bring down a couple of our best candidates and to mm-hmm. ignore some of the other good ones. And I thought, you know, and then you know, and on top of it all, I mean, then there was the whole brouhaha about the Red State Gathering and what Eric Erickson did, which is not, you know, the scope of this show. But I thought, you know, the public really deserves better, and we need to start talking about this just the way those ladies at the Viewer's View did.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured I would do a show like this.
Mm-hmm.
That's there where we are. And, you know, so I'm going to go into a couple of the ramifications of what we just witnessed last week. But before I do that, I'm going to recognize my brother who called in because I, towards the end of the show, I want him to chat about a couple of things related to the media. Hey, Phil, how are you?
Hey, good, Bob. How are you doing?
Good, good. Okay, so where are we with the debate gate, post-debate gate, or as Cold Warrior just observed, these are not debates. They are one-liner generators, which is a very good way of putting it. It is a game, a gotcha game. They are not debates in any, you know, in any way that resembles the classic understanding of the term. So, like again, where are we? The debate revealed a couple of things that we need to really ponder and take into account as we go on in this presidential election season. The first thing is the tenacity of these self-appointed gatekeepers who think that they can define the limits of acceptability for Republican candidates. I've already gone into, you know, Megyn Kelly, classic case with her questions to Scott Walker and Trump. Very divisive, gotcha questions, throw them off balance, make them look bad, forestall any serious discussion of the issues. Then there was the whole red state thing, the needless decision to disinvite Trump and the justification that was given for it, which to me was not credible. I think they read into Trump's statements something that simply was a very, very subjective interpretation with an agenda. And as conservatives and independents, we have to resist the intervention of these gatekeepers and turn elsewhere if they continue their antics. We need the candidates to, you know, make the case for themselves without artificial attempts to derail them. Now, I have a lot of reservations about Donald Trump. I mean, I admire him for the candor that he has injected into this campaign and the issues that he has injected that no one else has been talking about, illegal immigration, bad trade deals, this crazy ascendancy of ISIS. I mean, he is spot on.
Bob Streetwise's Italian Tomatoes, he's doing a Sunday show, so I thought I could participate today.
you know, one of the themes that you see on in the righty blogosphere is that Trump is a clown, he's a blowhard, he's an egomaniac. Well, he may be an egomaniac, he probably is, because no one is going to run for president without a healthy-sized ego. But a clown, I don't think so. And I'm going to blog about this later in the week, but Scott Adams, who created the Dilbert comic strip, has a very good column on his blog called Clown Genius, and he just he says Trump just has this knack for engaging and persuading the public with what he calls anchors, so statements that have a hypnotic power to kind of change the whole discussion and perception of reality of the people who listen to him, which he did with his Rosie O'Donnell comment, which he did with the his estimate of his own wealth. He's always doing it and molding the terms of the discussion in favor of his agenda. And if he keeps doing this consistently, the guy is going to be unstoppable. And all of the people who are railing against him and calling him a clown and trying to contrive more and more contrived ways to derail him really need to think about what they are doing. Because if he turns out to be the best candidate that we've got, and they actually do succeed in derailing him, what do we have left? Well, what we have left is Hillary Clinton and the now 60 classified emails.
Oh, 60. We're up to 60.
But
you know, Bob, I just want
going up.
Yeah, I want to interject. You know, George Will this morning, I did not watch it, but I saw Legal Insurrection. He has George Will was on, I think, this talk shows this morning, talking about that the GOP needs to purge Trump and his supporters. So you can imagine, you know, Legal Insurrection has a pretty high caliber viewership there. You know, we're not dummies. And George, and so you should see some of the comments that they wrote in response to George Will's talking about this.
This kind of talk is lunacy for a party that has lost the popular vote in five out of the six past elections. To say that, oh yeah, we can do without these 5, 6, 7 million people, and you know, produce a victory in 2016. It's like, what planet are you guys living on? You know, 5 out of the 6. 1992, 1996, 2000, 2008, 2012, lost popular vote every time. You don't have the margin to throw away millions of potential voters. We just don't have it. But the strategic sense is just totally collapsed because of this gatekeeper mentality, is that there seems to be, they would rather control access to the process and generate a losing candidacy than to engage somebody who is unorthodox, who they would have a lot of trouble controlling and winning. That's crazy to me. And
well, it's getting worse by the day.
It's getting worse by the day. And considering the high-stakes period that the country is entering, where it has more severe challenges than it has faced since the end of the Cold War, and Hillary is still, despite all of her problems, the likely president if the Republican candidate fails, and we know what that kind of presidency is going to be like. I mean, there really is a death wish in the Republican establishment. And, you know, I don't want the country to go down with the ship if they are in charge. So we'll just have to see what we can do. So it's nuts. It really is. The gatekeeper mentality is nuts. And as Cold Warrior is observing, you know, money and power are a great motivator for the gatekeepers to keep control of the process. And once again, I mean, I do urge people to follow his post on his new gig at Breitbart, where he's going into how the Republican Party actually works, how precinct committeemen direct the affairs of the party, elect the officers, have a huge say in platforms and selecting candidates, and he is engaged in getting people involved in that process. And that will be a long, that is not the work of one election cycle. Getting more Republican conservatives into the party is a work of a number of years. It will take a long time to bring about the change that is needed there. But, you know, we need change. Because why did we have this circus in the first place? Because the Republican Party agreed, again, to a debate that was hosted by hostile moderators and that was populated with too many candidates. And the media had the perfect opportunity to manipulate the process, give the candidates very little airtime, and what little airtime they had, the moderators used it to make them look bad. I mean, how many times do we have to go through this circus before we learn? And hopefully, if enough people get involved at the base of the party, change will be forced upwards. The other ramification of the debate, it just highlighted something that I think we've all been sensing for quite some time, which is the decline in the utility of Fox News for conservatives or independents or people just interested in politics who don't have any particular ideological agenda. Back in the day, you know, I appreciated Fox for its relative fairness in covering Bush and Iraq and some of the issues of the George W. Bush administration. But even then, they could be very annoying. I mean, I have very many memories of coming home from work, and we had a ritual when my mom was alive of watching Fox, the Fox News channel, especially O'Reilly. And all the confrontations and the yelling and the theatrics and the drama. And, you know, she would beg me to turn it off. And I mean, I had more tolerance than she did. But, I mean, in the end, sometimes it got to me too. And, you know, I did turn it off. And I don't think...
We were yelling the debate night. That must have been very similar to...
Oh, yeah.
I think the Fox thing revealed is a couple of things you've mentioned, but one of the most important things was to their loyal viewers, and I quit them in 2012 and just sporadically would watch them, and I did like Brett Baer and I Kelly File, and then I quit her a few months ago. I thought, I don't think I like what I'm seeing. But the two things happened to Fox, I think. Like you said, you were aware... People who are not normally politically aware or engaged were all very much watching what was going on. But the other thing that happened with them was their loyal viewers, people who never gave up, and we had all flocked to Fox because they filled a niche. They like, oh, finally a place where we're treated fairly, right? And guess what? Now millions see that Fox is not our friend.
Yeah, I mean, I think there has been a perceptible change in the tone and demeanor of Fox, you know, some of the symptoms, I have them listed here, omnipresent assertive blondes. I mean, I don't know if it's a hiring requirement if you're a woman to be a blonde on Fox, but it certainly seems that way. Contrived populism. I mean, a lot of times they just seem to pull their punches in critiquing the Obama administration and the Democrats. Mm-hmm. They take a more like, oh, well, it's a plague on both your houses. Both parties are at fault. You know, no. Mm-hmm. I mean, Obama and his, you know, extravagant assertion of executive power is running the show with a very complacent Republican Congress enabling him, and you have to assess those results for what they are, not, you know, blame the Republicans as if this is Republican policy that's being implemented. I mean, the Democrats have really been in the driver's seat, even though We took the House in 2010, and even though we took the Senate in 2014, because the Democrats know how to play the system, use threats of shutdowns and filibusters to get their way.
And
So
then
that's
demonize us, and then have the media demonize us and blame us and lie, and that's how they pull it off.
And then the last thing on my list is what I have noisy sensationalism. I mean, a lot of what Fox covers and the amount of airtime they devote to it is just garbage. It's, ratings fodder. They're out for clicks and views, and they focus on stuff that is, very, very trivial. But it's sensationalized, and it gets eyeballs onto the set. And again, I don't think we're well served by a channel that is going in that direction. So the conclusion that we have to reach, and it was very amply demonstrated in that debate, Fox is morphing into the establishment. They are there. We're having a mega merger here, where they're becoming very similar to the other networks. And there are a number of reasons for this. Rupert Murdoch is getting older. His sons are assuming more and more power in the organization. There is the, rumored eclipse of Roger Ailes as the Murdoch sons take more and more power in the organization. And even if that eclipse has not really happened yet, it's inevitable because in family dynasties, when the offspring take over, things change. The vision of the founder is replaced by whatever idiosyncrasies the children have, and that is kind of that. So we can't assume that the Fox of 2000 is going to be the Fox of 2020. I also think that Fox is responding to the general leftward tilt of the country under Obama and the ineffectiveness of the Republicans, especially the Republican Congress, in articulating an opposing vision. Fox is obviously playing to the gallery. They are craving acceptance, popularity, respectability. And in the battle of ideas, they pull their punches and are un and they're, they opt for bland, centrist mush. And that was very much evident in that debate. And it is evident every night on Fox News, even to me who hardly watches it. Whenever I do watch it, I see it. I see it. It's this very, oh, I don't know, artificial hothouse thing where it's a very artificial centrism that they're pushing. They will not engage on the real issues. So many conservatives, including me, no longer watch Fox News. Well, that was an easy decision for me because I got rid of cable. But I will pay very little attention to it when I see it on the internet. So we need to recognize and encourage people to be opportunistic regarding Fox News and, to use it when it's compatible with our goals, ignore it if it's not, and, trash it when it's actively hostile to it, to us, which it absolutely was during that last debate. And then, there are the alternatives, alternative news. Now, to me, my best news source these days is Twitter, because if you have a big enough Twitter following and they're, decent tweeters, they're going to be sending your way all sorts of information, links to news stories that you would never have time to find on your own. There is Breitbart, which has done a lot of great work. And of course, now that Cold Warrior is there, is going to do even more great work. So that is a, very good alternative source for news and information. Since I'm interested in finance and business, I find often that the financial press offers insights that the mainstream media is not going to give you. you know, whether it's from Bloomberg or the Wall Street Journal or CNBC or MarketWatch or Seeking Alpha. I mean, in addition to the strict core business stories, they shed a lot of light on the political process and what's going on in Washington, D.C. Then there's the foreign press. Now, a few weeks ago, I took out a subscription, which I thought I would, to the Daily Telegraph, because it, you know, provides excellent coverage of not only global and European news, but, you know, it's pretty good coverage of the United States. And some of the other foreign networks, Financial Times, The Guardian, even though it's left-leaning, sometimes has very good France 24. Often I see very interesting news stories that way. Then there are the opinion blogs, and, you know, we all have our favorites. Obviously, I write for the Minority Report. Penguin does Unified Patriots. There's Weasel Zippers. There's the Rights Group. There's Legal Insurrection. There are many others, but we have alternatives. And then there are these alternative news sites like The Blaze that are popping up, and they keep putting up very interesting content. And lately, you know, I've been tuning into Jason Howerton over at The Blaze, who has put the spotlight on some very interesting stories. And then, of course, there is internet radio and YouTube, the African-American ladies on The Viewer's View. Very aggressive presentation of views that you're not going to see on Fox, and God knows you won't see it on the rest of the mainstream media. And, you know, just to wrap up this part of it, you know, my brother and I have been having some discussions about streaming media and how easy it's getting for people to set up their own kind of like a broadcast or media operation. And Phil, I you had some interesting things about the economics of doing that. So I think
this whole digital revolution has really brought down the cost of everything today. The infrastructure is already out there. You have companies like Roku, Pluto TV, Ustream, Livestream. They're all looking for content providers. The cost of setting up a studio to stream and stream professionally, professional quality video, has plummeted, literally plummeted. You could basically set up a blue screen studio in a 10 by 15 office, you know? Three cameras, a switcher, computer interface, a Skype box, which will allow incoming calls to be switched to incoming video to be switched to a broadcast switcher, and you're in business, you know. I think that conservative organizations should start to embrace this kind of technology. And like I say, you know, companies like Roku, Pluto TV, they're begging, they're literally begging for content providers. So, you know, it's the accessibility of information or to disseminate information and a point of view, you know, it's just increasing on a daily basis.
Cold Warrior just put a little blurb in the chat about Cold Warrior TV is in the works. That is so cool. And you can check out his internet stuff at precinctproject.us. If I got that wrong, Cold Warrior, correct me. And you can also find him on Breitbart with the recent postings he did on the Precinct Project. So you had mentioned, now I don't remember if I'm remembering it right, was it $15,000-$20,000 capital investment?
You could put together a, and I mean a very high quality broadcast studio for about $15,000-$20,000, yeah.
So, I mean, that, I mean, obviously that is, for one individual, that is still a pretty steep.
Yeah, but for an organization, for
people pooling their resources, they could do that.
Yeah, I think you could do that. Pool resources.
So I mean that I think is just trying this Block Talk Radio platform, which is very amateurish by necessity because of it's a one man band usually on these shows operating everything. I mean it has had some potential, but these new technologies. You have to have an eye for the visual arts if you're going to do video. I mean, you have to look good on TV. I mean, let's face it.
Yeah, well, there is a certain, you do need production chops, to do video properly. You do need a couple of people who have experience in video production. If you go on the internet and you start checking out companies like Blackmagic or NewTek, you go on their websites and you'll see the cost of these broadcast switchers and these broadcast cameras. I mean, they have these high-definition cameras today. They're $1,900. I mean, that's absurdly inexpensive.
Yeah. Obviously, most of us, I mean, I'm never going to do video. I just can't see myself ever doing that. when I do these shows, the public must be sheltered from the state of my house and what I look like.
See, I think, blogs like maybe Breitbart or other blogs like that, I think that they should, they need to embrace the streaming TV and set up these kind of conservative channels.
If a site has enough presence where it could rent an office, it's very doable. From the economics that you're laying out there. I mean, most of us are not going to do video for public consumption, other than posting things on YouTube and stuff with a, cell phone camera or stuff like that. But if you want to step up your game a couple of notches, it is very doable. And we, as consumers of video, should be on the lookout for these new ventures as they, come on scene and support them, because it is to all of our interests to ferret out, the new kind of distribution channels of conservative content and support it with, our clicks. So, I mean, that's the main point I wanted to make by doing this show, is that there are so many options, and we simply cannot trust the gatekeepers anymore or hitherto friendly enterprises like Fox News. They are just not going to do it for us anymore. They just won't.
Well, the establishment, the establishment GOP is really not too much different than the establishment Democrats. It's they're almost interchangeable today,
Well, yeah, I mean, and we got such an illustration of that when the Republicans finally took over the Senate. What happened? Almost nothing. Homeland Security was not derailed from pursuing amnesty. The only thing that stopped that was the courts, and I'm not sure how effectively that was stopped even there.
nothing really has been happening. I mean, yes, there have been some slowdowns in Obama's judicial appointments, and, you know, budgets are being passed in the normal way, which was not the case under Harry Reid, and with Republicans in control of Congress, some of the more outrageous Democratic policy proposals don't have a chance of getting enacted into legislation, but in terms of Obama's executive agenda, almost nothing has happened to stop it. And that crazy thing that they did with the Iran agreement, where, you know, effectively you they kind of bastardized the treaty approval process in order to grease the skids for an approval of the Iran deal, that to me was just such a powerful example of what has gone wrong with the consensus system in Washington, D.C. And, you know, God bless Ted Cruz and some of the others who, you know, speak against it. But this mania for consensus when you have this crazy leftist in the White House is very damaging, you know, to our vitality as a movement. And I wanted to mention, Cold Warrior did post the link, and it's theprecinctproject.wordpress.com is where you can find more about the precinct project. We have another caller who I'm afraid I have not been paying attention to. Let me recognize them. Area code 480, who are you?
It's Cold Warrior.
Oh, that's you. Hey, CW.
Hi.
So you've had quite a week. Post-debate.
Yes, I have.
very dramatic, but long overdue recognition at Breitbart. And maybe dramatic non-recognition other places.
Right.
That shall remain nameless. So what is this Cold Warrior TV, or are you in a position to say anything about it?
Well, I don't want to say too much about it yet, but your brother is exactly right. The ability to create a content, to create digital content for any provider. You can do it yourself, but I mean, the stuff you need to produce what you need, the equipment itself doesn't cost very much. I mean, to create have a green screen background that's,
yeah, it's all done green screen today.
Right.
I mean, they have programs $300-$400 now that basically virtual set designers. You could, you know, you spend some time. You create something that looks something like out of Fox. You know, looks exactly like any broadcast major broadcast company.
And I want to add that my brother is in the business. He does a lot of work in media. So if you're in the market for consulting services, drop me a line, streetwise.it@gmail.com, and I'll put you in touch. But, you know, I think this is a revolution that we're going to have, and it's going to be driven by the just total dissatisfaction on the part of normal people like us, and they're not all conservatives either, with the garbage that is being, you know, presented to us as news and opinion week after week.
Well, you know, there was a little, I forget where it was, it might have been something on, it might have been a link on Drudge today. You know, I mean, Trump has got the ears of Democrats too right now.
He's pulling hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people into at least evaluating, you know, his candidacy, which is something that none of the others have been able to do. Even, you know, the resolutely conservative ones that we admire, you know, like a Cruz or, you know, to a lesser extent, a Paul, they have a lot of trouble with what I guess they call crossover appeal. You know, how do you get independents and disaffected Democrats to pull the lever? And one of the things that, you know, the gatekeepers, what are they always? Oh, he's not a real Republican. Oh, he supported Democrats in the past.
Well, the other narrative that's going on there is, you know, he's in cahoots with Hillary.
Siphon
votes away, you know. So,
and I mean, I don't know what's in his head, but if he was in cahoots with Hillary, all he had to do to support Hillary was to throw his financial resources behind her. He didn't need to stage this elaborate, you know, game. No, my percent, you know, Ronald Reagan, who, by the way, built a coalition that depended on Democrats to get elected. He didn't get elected by being the true ideological conservative. He got elected by a blend of conservative principles coupled with crossover appeal. Ronald Reagan said, you know, the camera never lies. And I think over time that is true. I mean, I've watched a lot of Trump on TV. And, you know, my sense of this guy is that he is not ideological in any way, and he is certainly not a conservative. He's a nationalist, he is a pragmatist, and he sees the country going to pot. And some of the things that he harps on, like bad trade deals and stuff like that, I mean, I see that in my business writings almost every time I make an article, you see it. The impact of H-1B visas, of immigration, of bad trade deals where, you know, the one in the aviation industry, we've signed one bad one after another, and the foreign carriers are developing luxury complexes and luxury hubs, mega hubs, that are going to outcompete American carriers and even European carriers. And, you know, Trump says things like you get to LaGuardia like a third world country. It does. You look at airports in Dubai and Qatar and Doha. It's just a difference, like, that's the first world, and we're the third world. So I think a lot of this conspiracy talk about Trump, he is a very no-nonsense businessman who's taking a businessman's approach to politics. Now, that has limitations because ideology is part of politics, but on the other hand, when you have a government that is failing as bad as ours is, with its, you know, uncontrollable deficits and the collapse of American prestige abroad, maybe right now is not the time for an ideological candidacy. It's time to get somebody in there who can get the job done. So, I don't know. It's just a very... This gatekeeper thing, though, man, that really caught my attention when the blow-up occurred about the Red State gathering, because it just crystallized it to me. And on Twitter, I mean, you have all of these people that will invade your timeline if you say anything positive about Trump or even neutral. They come in and they start, you know, attacking you. It's like, you know, who died? You know, did God die and you got and you replaced him? I mean, let everybody make up their own mind. So anyway, I haven't had time yet to go into the Hillary news today. I'm kind of dying to see what the 60 classified emails are. And you know, while all this attention is focused on Trump, this lady is getting away with murder. And the odd thing about it is the only one that seems to be opposing her are operatives within the Obama administration who seem determined to derail her with all of these selective drip, drip, drip disclosures. It's really kind of mafia-type stuff.
Well, the thing is, you know what? I mean, they nailed Petraeus exact for the same charges that Hillary should face, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm wondering, talk about conspiracy theories, I'm wondering if Petraeus was some sort of crafty, strategically conceived trial run to get the precedent set. Okay, the guy violated the technicality of the law, and he's a war hero. He's, you know, a heroic military figure. If we can nail him, then Hillary's going to just keep sending messages on her server, and she's going to be, you know, hoist on her own petard. I just wonder if it really is that Machiavellian in the corridors of power.
Yeah, well, you know, they nailed him for basically possessing, you know, top secret documents. And she, same thing, you know, in the... on her server. I mean, it's the same, exactly same thing. So,
well, you know, it's a funny thing. I mean, all this posturing, because, you know, I am convinced that, I don't know how much of a plan there was, but there are certainly people in the Obama administration who are hostile to Hillary and who are doing their part to make life very difficult for her. But when you think about the grand scheme of things, you know, the Obama administration let foreign hackers go into 19 million security records, and nobody in Washington, D.C. bats an eye. Got very little relative coverage. Our system is crazy, and our media is never focusing on the main point. They're either focusing on, you know, garbage, or on gatekeeping agendas, or, you know, I don't know what the hell they're focused on. They're just not focused on what a reasonable person would think are priorities. I don't know. Crazy stuff. Anything else people would like to bring up before we wrap up? Any takers? We've lost.
Okay, It's Cold Warrior.
Uh-huh.
I just left a couple of comments about it, and it's about I don't know if it's the inability or the reluctance or the fear to actually come out and say what's really happening in this country at the very highest levels. And the people who are running this country are not playing on our side. They're playing for the other side. They're deliberately trying to destroy the country as much as possible. They're doing it in a way where it always looks like they're idiots or they're, how could they possibly negotiate with these people and think they are negotiating in good faith? They know exactly what they're doing. The guy who's running the CIA is probably a converted Muslim. We've got advisors at the top of the FBI and the CIA and the Department of Homeland Security, security advisors who are devout Muslims. where's Huma? I have a Twitter handle, hashtag, where is Huma, ? I mean, anybody with half a brain knows that she is not working on behalf of the interests of the people of the United States. She can't be, based on her background. She just can't be. Nobody wants to talk about it.
Cultural agenda has an enormous amount of power in liberal circles, and you know, I'm kind of divided in my mind as to what's really going on. Are they so blinded by this ideology of multiculturalism, and they're living it too? Because Kerry, who's negotiating for our side, has Iranian in-laws. Valerie Jarrett is of Iranian background. I think her father was an Iranian communist. Absolutely, the Obama administration is the most leftward administration I think we have ever had in the history of this country, and liberal Democrats in general subscribe to this politically correct multicultural agenda, which they think is for the benefit of the country, and common sense is telling everybody that it's not, and that it's always backfiring. And you know, the kind of moment of truth is coming up with this Iran treaty, which agreement, it's not really a treaty the way they crafted everything, where there is a possibility that this thing is going to get turned down, which I didn't think a few weeks ago, but I think...
Yeah, I heard Obama refer to it now. No, it's not even an agreement, it's an arrangement.
Yeah, it's an arrangement. And again, I mean, it just, the fact that this legislative configuration is being tolerated by the Republican Congress as testament to everything that is wrong with the Republican Congress. It should be a treaty, and it should be subject to the rules of approving a treaty. But there is just this spinelessness. Conspiracy theories aside, I have to wonder, where the hell, what does the Republican leadership think it's doing? Whose side are they on?
Well, I was going to make the point, and I think you just sort of made it. This, bringing it back to Trump and why Trump is so high in the polls, is Trump is the only candidate who's saying things like, number one, Hillary Clinton should be in jail. I mean, he's saying that. And no other candidate is saying stuff like that. And that's why he resonates, because that's what the so-called silent majority, they're thinking these things, and they feel like the Republicans, the elected Republicans who are running for the presidency, and I include all of them who hold office right now, what the hell have they been doing? They haven't been calling out, not until just recently, like Cruz did to McConnell, thank goodness, but they just haven't been fighting hard enough. Why haven't they defunded Obamacare like they promised? Why haven't they done all these other things that they promised? I mean, for crying out loud, they couldn't even kill the Export-Import Bank. I mean, gee whiz.
Well, their donors would never go for that. I mean... You know, that's one of the reasons Trump is infuriating so many people in the establishment, because he is forthrightly talking about the role of money in influencing political decisions. And he's very upfront about it. He's going, oh, sure, I gave money. They love me. When I was a businessman and I gave contributions, they loved me. They took my calls. They came to my wedding. That is so cool that he has the gall to say that.
And I think that this attempt to make him, you know, unrespectable is just fueling his rise in the polls. Now, if anybody is going to torch Donald Trump, it will be Donald Trump. And I, you know, was really looking for some evidence of that during, you know, from the time that he announced, you know, if the guy is really kind of, you know, an unstable, you know, narcissistic, egotistical blowhard, he's going to come out with something that makes him look really stupid, and it will turn people off. But again, I'm looking at a lot of footage of him, not always the most publicized footage. And I don't see, I see a very smart, very shrewd, very ego-driven guy who does not have much of an ideology, but is very, very dedicated to the national interest. And, you know, I'm not saying he should be our guy, but I'm very willing to tolerate the, to accept the possibility that he could be our guy. And, you know, artificial attempts to destroy him, which I think would be very hard to do, I think we should call people out on that.
Well, you know, that whole thing kind of backfired on Fox a little bit.
And Fox got enormous blowback. And it
definitely backfired on Megyn Kelly. I mean, if you go on... you know, I belong to that disgust site. Yeah. And if you go on all the blogs over there, you know, people are incensed over Megyn Kelly. They're incensed over Fox. I think it blew up in their face.
Well, Trump had this meeting with Roger Ailes, which was sort of this kiss and make up moment, I guess. And that sent that had some very interesting symbolic value that the two met after the debate. And then Megyn Kelly goes on summer vacation.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, well, that was, you know, that was a break. We needed a break. That was scheduled. No, I'm sorry. That's the classic diplomatic illness. You know, when you ignite a firestorm and you're a media hound, you don't go on vacation. You milk it. The fact that, you know, she had to exit the scene temporarily, Fox really got stung. People don't go on vacation where there are ratings to be had.
And then there was that clip from her on the Stern show, making the rounds on the internet. I mean, that blew up in her face. You know, it's just so hypocritical of her.
I was going to play that, but then I figured it's a Sunday show. I probably shouldn't.
That was just.
It's making rounds. Everybody, you know, who's plugged into the news cycle has probably heard it by now. These gatekeepers have got to wake up. The country is in trouble. The public is not going to tolerate.
You know, Bob, you mentioned something a long time ago, and we're reminded of it constantly. We live today in a YouTube society, a YouTube culture. Everything is sound bites today, and the record is there for everybody to hear. When you open your mouth, you better be sure nothing's going to pop up from your past that's going to make you look foolish.
Well, that's where Eric Erickson ran into all this trouble because, you know, he... And, you know, in the decision to disinvite Trump by this Freudian interpretation he put into the public airwaves about what Trump's blood remarks really meant, you know, he opened himself to an analysis of all of his controversial statements. And, you know, he's a very, you know, that conservative Christian thing of his has led him to say some very strange things. when it's heard by a mainstream audience, and then to pose as this, you know, valiant kind of Victorian defender of womanhood against, you know, Donald Trump, a.k.a. Snively Whiplet. I mean, it's just crazy. People think they can really get away with that stuff now. And it's like, you know, again, it's all over. I mean, when you go on Howard Stern, okay, Howard Stern has a huge audience.
Gigantic audience.
And you know damn well that if you go on Howard Stern, you're not going to be discussing Neoplatonic philosophy. So if you as a journalist go on that show, you know the show is laced with sexual innuendo, and he is going to draw you into it.
So and she was a willing participant.
And she was a willing participant.
And, you know, this was before she was the big Kelly Files, and, you know, she was trying to make a name for herself, so she didn't, you know.
Yeah, she was on the make and wanted to be, you know, enhance her media sex appeal and relevance and all of that by playing to the celebrity culture.
Exactly.
And then she casts herself as a defender of, you know, outraged womanhood. Well, sorry, no sale. And, you know, in terms of Fox's viewership, once they kind of saw the lay of the land here, they are outraged by that. They feel that, you know, they are being played for fools, which, you know, they have been. So this is just going to keep happening. I mean, you know, Donald Trump has, you know, a lot of things that he has said and put into the public record that are going to come back and possibly bite him, but the immunization for Trump, everybody knows who he is. There is no surprise there. There is no mystery about what Donald Trump is like. He's been in the public consciousness through the celebrity show and all of his other media appearances for so many years that there is not this indignation that you said you were one thing and now we find out you're another. But Fox is finding it out. Megyn Kelly is finding it out. Eric Erickson is finding it out.
Well, there was, you know, I forget what, was it Independent Journal last week? They had somebody wrote, I think it was Independent Journal, they wrote a column is, what are you going to call Trump? How are you going to describe Trump today that hasn't already been described? You know, is he this? Is he that? Is he? He is. We know this, and he doesn't care.
He doesn't.
You know,
and
you're not going to attack him with a new label.
Yeah, everybody knows who he is. He is who he is.
Exactly. Yeah.
He does not pretend to be anything else. So when you can't get him on that, you know, you can't nail him on the hypocrisy thing, all of a sudden you're playing on his territory. It's like, well, I'm here to talk about the issues and what needs to be fixed in this country, and they can't change that conversation. So, you know, I think some people better reconcile themselves to the possibility that he could be the nominee and he could win.
Yeah, well,
I'm not saying he should be the nominee. I mean, the jury is still out on that. We have to see how he conducts himself over the next few months. But I think people really appreciate the change that he has brought to the discourse so far. And the gatekeepers, I think they're biting off something that is beyond their comprehension as to how big it is. Because, you know, Trump is going to be very hard to bring down, partly because the country is in such bad shape. When the country is in good shape, consensus-driven, go-along-to-get-along politics, it has power to it. But the country is not in good shape. People know it's not in good shape. And they're looking for answers. Now, I think there is a possibility that it's possible that if Trump actually does flame out, he has made a Cruz candidacy possible, which I wouldn't have thought a year ago.
Well, there was another article last week, too. You know, if he isn't the candidate, he may be the kingmaker, you know?
Yes. And the self-appointed gatekeepers, they need to really, you know, go and ponder the tea leaves on some remote site someplace and not distracted by all the media drama, and think about what they are doing and where the country is at this point in its history and what it needs to be at Pennsylvania Avenue, because the next president is going to have to confront some very, very challenging things. And it is not beyond the realm of possibility of another war, a massive terror attack, some kind of nuclear incident or bioterror incident or whatever.
I know.
That is becoming more likely as ISIS gets more money, more territory, more adherence. Yeah, Russia is doing what Russia does. China is doing what China does. Iran is doing what Iran does. We are weakening our military and cutting our army and cutting our navy and just cutting our defense readiness in general. I mean, when will the proverbial you-know-what hit the fan?
Well, you know, it's
who
the
do you
Clinton
want there when it does?
Yeah. It's almost the Clinton administration all over again when they go to war and the military's unprepared, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, Clinton compared to Obama is like some Rambo.
I know.
I mean, at least Clinton, you know, give the devil his due. He had a sense for how to run the economy. He knew how to compromise. He knew, you know, he was willing to do a centrist agenda. With Obama, it's left, 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 all the time. All the time, all the time, just left, left, left. And a lot of the Democratic Party goes along with him. I mean, they have a lot of thinking to do, too, because if the worst happens, the Democrats will be in the doghouse for 40 years. If somebody detonates a device in the United States, the Democratic Party can kiss its rear end goodbye for a couple of generations. So, you know, this is the environment we're dealing with, and this is why Trump is rising the way that he has. The only person that can derail Donald Trump is Donald Trump. And, you know, it remains to be seen whether, you know, if there is some hidden character flaw there where he has a real meltdown as opposed to, you know, some, you know, contrived media battle with the Megyn Kellys of the world. But I just don't see it. I don't see it. I think the guy is very smart. He's very determined. He's very driven. And those are the types that kind of make it.
Can I recommend an article?
Sure.
It's on Breitbart. It's... let me try the Breitbart News. Yeah, there's no byline. The title is Dilbert Creator. Trump bitch slapped the entire GOP establishment.
Yeah, that I mentioned that article in the opening part of the show. Yeah, Scott Adams, he did a very clever analysis of Trump as to why he's doing so well.
Right.
And
I recommend everybody read the entire article.
Yeah, it's really good. But you know, people want answers. People want answers, and you know, the Republican establishment, the red state, some of the other, you know, they call them the Trump clown car brigade. They call Trump a clown. His supporters are clowns. And it's like, guys, what universe are you living in? You know, the guy keeps getting more and more popular, and your attempts to be gatekeepers look more and more foolish.
I just went to the main page of Breitbart, and the headline is, Donald Trump releases immigration reform plan designed to get Americans back to work. You know, and he met with Jeff Sessions to do this. It'll probably be the next thing that, because, you know, everybody's been criticizing him about he doesn't have any specifics. It says, billionaire Donald Trump released a detailed immigration policy position paper on Sunday morning. So here's the latest. And, of course, it's probably going to get him at the front of the news cycle for another 24 to 48 hours.
Well, you know, on the subject of immigration, we're running out of time. The show's got just 3 minutes to run. But we need to really look at what goes on with immigration, because I did a post on this at TMR, and I called it the immigration sandwich. And we're being hammered at two ends. We have record numbers of these H-1B visas being issued where visa holders are displacing American workers, and especially in information technology. And then you have the undocumented workers, the illegals, who are taking all of the lower wage jobs and pushing wages down. And everybody thinks, well, if you want to control illegal immigration, you know, Hispanics are going to get angry. Well, second generation legal Hispanics have the most to lose by this influx of people undercutting wages. So it's not as simple as people think. And that's why, again, when Trump focuses on immigration, you know, the politically correct say, oh, he's going to shoot himself in the foot. It's not happening because the people can see the reality around them. So, interesting stuff.
Well, the title of his position paper is Immigration Reform That Will Make America Great Again.
Okay. Well, I'm going to look forward to the next chapters of the political soap opera. We are approaching the end, so I just want to close with a remark or two. And that remark is, everybody, find your candidate. Feel free to support them. Do not let gatekeepers suppress your right to your views as to what you think the best president is going to be. This is a very high-stakes game that we are engaged in. We need the best that we can do. And I don't think gatekeepers are going to get it for us. So vote your convictions, express your convictions. Do not let yourself be suppressed. Choose the and run with it. Don't let people intimidate you. And I want to thank everybody who called into the show or who participated in chat. We'll be back in a week or two with the next chapter in the soap opera. Have a very great weekend, everybody, and thanks again for listening.